So, this week's parsha is Parshat Bamidbar. We start a new book. Although, as we saw last week, really the whole last third of Sefer Vayikra was land-oriented, which means what it dealt with was movement and the anticipated movement, because the time at Sinai is about to come to an end, and now they're going to have to continue and go on to a new place. So, perhaps unsurprisingly, the parsha begins with a couple of things, and I want to start taking note of the very beginning, because the very beginning is a census. V'dibur Hashem Moshe ben Midbar Sinai ba'ol hamoed ba'chad l'chodesh hasheni b'shana hasheni letzei tamir v'tetzrayim lemor. God spoke, it tells us where, it tells us when, which we shouldn't take for granted, because we've gone a long time where perhaps we have lost our bearings, where it hasn't told us exactly where we are, or although we know where we are, but it doesn't tell us the date, even though we know the date. So why the insistence over here? So I'm going to say something which is Kabbalistic, but if you're Sephardic and you know that we're a week before Shavuot, then it will resonate. If not, it won't at all. And that is, one of the things that they do with the Tikkun Leil Shavuot is that they read about the marriage between God and the Jewish people, which was what Har Sinai is. So therefore, there was a comment which implied, or says, that this is the ketuvah. What do you need for ketuvah? You need a time, you need a date, you need a place. So over here, this is then the ketuvah. But as I said, that's a very strange statement to make now, because the ketuvah really should have been prior to this. But one can only say that if one is anticipating Shavuot and knows about this whole theme of marriage. Se'ud Rosh Kol Adat B'nei Israel. And what Rosh means, what Adat means, and B'nei Israel means, L'mishpachotam, L'beit Avotam, because there's lots of words which are descriptive, and each one there needs to be understood. B'mispar Shemot Kol Zachar L'gugulatam, we're going to be counting the males, for which purpose we're about to be told in a moment. B'ben Esrim Shana V'mala Kol Yotzei Tzava B'Yisrael. So all those who go to war. So now we know the rationale or the motive has been revealed. It's an army. We are going to be moving. As we move from Sinai, again, the objective is to go to the land of Israel. As we go to the land of Israel, we may meet opposition. We may meet people along the way. We need people who can fight. So right away, we're being told about an army. We're being told that certain people are going to be elevated for particular tasks. And these are the men. Now, we're not sure exactly what these men are for. And little by the very end, by Ted Zion, they're described as Elu Kru'ei Ha'eda. These people are the ones who, are invited to the assembly. These are the people who, again, have some kind of leadership positions. Nisi'ei matot avotam. And their leaders, of course, the word matot over here would be interesting. They are presidents, leaders from families, Rosh Alfei Yisrael Haim. So let's pause for a moment, because something just now happened where we don't necessarily realize that there's something significant that just now took place. And the reason we don't realize it is because it's not just that, you know, we have this theme of Ein Mukdam U'Mochar Torah. We get completely confused in terms of when things were introduced, because, first of all, we're subject to certain midrashic interpretations and sensibilities. Let me explain to you what I'm saying. We're talking here about tribal affiliations. It's going to become much clearer as we move into the next chapter. Where was the last time that we talked about tribal affiliations and separations and so on? So you're going to tell me, well, of course, when the sea was split, there was a 12-lane highway that they all went through, which I suspect some of you know. It does not exactly say that in the text itself, but you notice what we just now did. We just now read a Bamidbar theme, and we read it right back into Sefer Shemot. We do it to Vayikra as well. There was this whole thing about the Mikalel and why was he upset and so on. So Rashi there reads it in. Oh, he tried to come to the tent, to the family of Dan, and he wasn't really from Dan. His mother was from Dan. His father wasn't from Dan. Doesn't say that in the text either. So again, we're reading later Bamidbar issues into earlier episodes. So I'm just pointing out this thing called tribal affiliation, tribalism. Those of you who don't think tribalism is important, So I don't know what to say to you. I mean, if you want me to, but tribalism is incredibly important. If you don't understand what happened last night in the Knesset, it has to do with tribalism. If you wanted me to speak about that, but that's all that I'll say. Based upon now, we will have this issue of the tribes, and it's going to be important moving forward. Because as we actually get into the land, there were possibilities. One possibility is that we just enter the land as a people, and everybody lives wherever it is that they live, sort of like today. Or the division will be based upon tribes. And if the division in the land were based upon tribes, so it's not so strange to already make a division based on tribes over here. I'm just pointing out that, as far as I can tell, it's been lacking till this point. And I'll think about another thing. And again, this I'm not going to explain. I'm not going to answer everything. I just want to introduce modes of approach over here. Leadership. Okay, leadership is something which also we talk about forever. There have been various attempts at leadership throughout the Chumash in order to establish certain leaderships, mostly secondary leadership. The primary leadership in terms of Moshe is established other than Korach, the spies. But back in Yitro, there was this whole back and forth, oh, you need to appoint others, otherwise you're going to have a problem if everything is top down. Were those other leaders somehow tribal affiliated? We don't see anything about that. When we get to the Shivim Zakenim, and then you have to ask, well, what did that episode have to do with this episode of the Zakenim? Because they were judges, and the Zakenim seemed also to have some kind of judicial responsibilities. So again, we read something into it, how many were taken from each tribe. Of course, that's not said in the text either. But what did the division of the 70 elders have to do with the tribes, and what did the one by Yitro have to do with tribes? Which means, and for that matter, what do these men have to do later on, where we do have a division of tribes, which is, of course, by the spies. But that's interesting, because by the spies, again, it's moving towards the land of Israel. In the land of Israel, we're going to have a division based upon tribes. So when you have a division based around tribes, then it's not so awkward to already introduce the tribal divisions. So again, I'm just pointing out that there are these things that we just take for granted, and we read them backwards into other texts, even though they're not necessarily there. Now, that's one. That's the first thought. Second thought is one where it's also something that we tend not to do, but I specifically want to do it. It's an impression, and it's probably, as I was reading it through either early in the week, last week, one of the first things that hit me is right after we have these 12 leaders, then it introduces their names. Which, by the way, is interesting, because now you have a certain parallel between the beginning of Shemot and the beginning of Bamidbar, introducing of names. Of course, there it's the names of the tribes, but here it's the names of the leaders of the tribes, and now you realize that's a much sharper connection than perhaps you realized earlier. So here are the names of these people. L'Reuven Elitzur ben Shteur. So let's just stop there for a moment. What is the job over here? So for lack of a better term, I'm going to call him the General of Reuven. Why am I calling him the General of Reuven? Because the other people are going to be the soldiers. What's the purpose of the census? In order to get soldiers. What do you call the person now who's in charge? I would say the person in charge is the General. So he's the General of Reuven. What's his name? Elitzur. Now, is that a great name for a general? I mean, it is so good. It's like, you know, Hollywood couldn't even have made this up, you know, in terms of giving the name Elitzur ben Shteur. I mean, again, this is a great name. Instead of Kochi Votzim Yodi Osat Chayil Hazeh, that it's my power and me. No, it's Elitzur. It's God. God is the rock, and God is strong, and God is powerful, and so on. So the name itself is just a really powerful name. Now, how many of you are willing to admit that you completely skipped that over and just went to the next pasuk? Okay, that was one. And you didn't even begin to pay attention that the name itself may have something to it. And to continue, L'Shimon Shlumiel. Now, you're going to say Shlumiel because that's how you were raised. But no, it's Shlumiel. El, again, God is over there. You have either peace or shleimut, shalom or shleimut, El of God, peace of God, which is also, that is a wonderful name for somebody who's involved in fighting. And then look at his Ben Tsuri Shaddai, which is real close to what we had before. So now, so far, I hope you're willing to admit now that two out of two, these names are far more thematically connected. And those of you who are not sure of the significance over here, when we go to the spies, the names there all seem to be names of animals, and not all, but a lot of them are. And there's even a suggestion that maybe it's even the same people. But if it's the same people, so then what happened? So then something happened that they lost their identity, as it were, because of the tasks involved. But let's just argue now that they're not the same people. I would even then say the opposite is true, is that when they sent the spies, they were not sent on a military expedition. Because if you're sending a military expedition, you would send people like Elitzur ben Shteur, which means the fact that he wasn't sent shows that it was not military, and that was a whole separate purpose in that. So therefore, the names over here, I think, are far more important than sometimes we let on. We're not stopping yet. The third one, Nachshon ben Aminadav. So there you could begin to say Nachshon, Nachash, and you're not sure, even though he probably has the best reputation of all of them, but also Aminadav is something which is interesting, because there is a statement of peoplehood, and there's a statement of generosity in terms of peoplehood, and in terms of somebody seeing what is the job. Ben Aminadav, I think, then becomes a very important name as well. Netanel ben Soar. So again, Netanel, you notice, again, the name of God over here. Eliav, again, Eliav, you have God, and so on, the God of my father, Ben Chelon. Elishama ben Amihud. So again, I just have to ask you, how in the world did you miss all of this? Elishama ben Amihud, Gamliel ben Pedatzur, you notice the Tzur again, Avidan ben Gidoni, Achi Ezer ben Ami Shaddai, Pagiel ben Achran, Eliasaf ben Deuel, Achi Ra, we don't know what to do with, ben Enan. So basically we got, I think, I could argue 11 out of 12 are relatively easy, and we're not going to work that hard, because, again, this is the kind of thing that I'm far more interesting of hovering a little bit above the text and sort of looking down, and I'm not interested in actually analyzing, you know, every leaf on every single tree. This is a forest look. We're looking down, we see the trees, and, well, that tree's interesting, that tree's interesting, that tree's interesting, but we're not going any further down into this. It's rather the impression that this gives us, which means, I'm going to say this again. It's an army. How do I know it's an army? Because it said, Kol Yotzei Tzavah B'Yisrael. And who are the leaders? These are the leaders that we want. These are the right men. These are the people who should be leading. Moving on from this, we get then to the second chapter, which I did not bother right now writing the whole thing for you. But the second chapter then tells us about a further division, which is interesting as well, of taking our 12 tribes, and I just do want to pause for one more second over here. The sequence of the tribes is the other thing that we look at. I think I once gave a whole class on that. I looked at every single place in Bamidbar that the tribes were mentioned and see what the sequence is. Over here, we start with Reuven, that we liked. We went to Shimon, that makes sense. Skip Levi, go to Yehuda. Then we got Yisachar Zevulun. So what did we just do? 5 out of 6, skipped Levi, 5 out of 6, Leah children. Then we go to Yosef. We had Ephraim and Menashe. Order is backwards, right? Ephraim is before Menashe. And then Binyamin. So we go Leah children, Rachel family. And then we moved on to Dan, Asher, Gad, and Naphtali. Then we moved on to children of Bilhah and Zilpah. And again, the exact sequence over there. So again, that's interesting, because I'm not saying that a priori, if I asked you to line up the 12 tribes, any of you would have done it this way. But post facto, when you see this list, all of you could have given a pretty good theory as to what happened over here. So this is the kind of thing that it's easier to be Monday morning quarterback. Oh, that was the strategy, rather than having anticipated this strategy prior to it happening. But as I say, we see at least some kind of order, and it's not one of complete chaos. On the other hand, when we get to, I would say page 6, but you'll start looking for it and you don't have it, and I have it. So when we get to page 6, and here I have my chart of the encampments, the way that they're told to go and to park, as it were. around, and this is two issues. One is one of parking, and the other is one of marching, and both of those issues are involved. What's the sequence of the marching, and what's the sequence or the order or the formation of the encampment? So it's at that point that we find some other interesting information. We start with Yehuda. Yehuda's first, so now that hold it, why is Yehuda first? What happened that suddenly Yehuda went first? We go from Yehuda to Yisachar and Zvulun, and that becomes one side. That is going to be the side which is the side on the east, eastward. And those three, Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun. So now again, post facto, I can give a theory. We skipped over Reuven. Why? Because Reuven's a loser. I hate to say that, but Reuven messed up, so we got rid of Reuven. We get rid of Shimon for the same reason. We get rid of Levi for that reason and another reason. And then by default, we have then the next three Leah children. But again, that's totally, you know, post-fact looking at the situation and analyzing it. So we've now put Yehuda first, Yisachar and Zvulun. Incidentally, for those of you who did not pay attention or haven't been paying attention, that's going to be the same sequence that we're going to find when the offerings are going to be brought in the Mishkan in terms of the order of the Nisim. So therefore, this sequence and that sequence have some kind of matching, and that itself may be significant. From there, we move over to the displaced Leah child, which is Reuven, and he is going to be together with Shimon and with God. So Reuven being with Shimon makes kind of sense, so therefore we have our two displaced Leah, and this is going to be on the south, and God got thrown into it. So where did God come from? So God is going to be a child, not will be, God is a child of... So you know it's like one out of four, which probably could be cut down one out of two, which I may as well say it. So which one? Zilpah. So therefore, you have over here a now second-rate Leah child, another second-rate Leah child, again, Reuven and Shimon because of the intrigue, and you have, again, a quote-unquote second-rate Leah child, which is not nice to say, but a child of Zilpah. So therefore, you have the primary Leah children on the east, and now you have the secondary Leah children, and by extension, on the south, so that itself is interesting, and it takes us from 1 to 6. We then move on to the west, and the west is going to be the Rachel side, and that will be very easy when you have Ephraim with Menasha and Binyamin. So now you just feel we have it's Rachel, it's Rachel's family. And then the last three will be you can say whoever's left, which I guess is okay, but we actually have Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. So what we have over here is children of concubines who were left off, and that's going to be the ones on the north. We don't always remember it that way, that's the way the division is, but it does go, you know, clockwise, east, south, west, north. When they march, the first group goes first, the second group goes second, the third group goes third, and the fourth group goes fourth. So therefore, what was like around the clock then ends up 1, 2, 3, and 4. So therefore, the camp of Dan becomes last. Now, this is quite mysterious in terms of who made this division, or where this division came from, or how arbitrary this is, or what the purpose of this is. And let me say another introduction. And that is that the more basic something seems, the more simple something seems, and the more insignificant something seems, the more likely that you're going to find a deep mystical interpretation. The reason for this is you don't need deep mystical interpretation when something seems incredibly important. But when something seems as if it's, okay, arbitrary, you're going to find that there's much more interpretation. And then our question will be, is this interpretation, or have we actually uncovered something which is far more meaningful? So let's start. Source number 2 is Midrash and Midrash Rabbah, and 2 and 3 and 4, all of them are. And I'm going to, and 5. So we're going to see how much I can explain just by reading these sources. The reason I decided to go to these sources is because essentially all of the commentaries are doing the same thing. They're just like cutting and pasting, one taking one, the other taking another, another taking a third, and they're just reading it into the text. So let's just go to the primary source and just take a look and see what the Midrashim actually are saying about this. Number two, it says as follows, Chiba gedola chiba chibiban HaKadosh Baruch Hu sha'asan digalim kamalchei asharet. So it says that the fact that God divided them into camps and then made something called a degel, and made these flags, if you will, was based upon the incredible God, love that God had, but it just gave an analogy as well. The analogy is because this is something which actually belongs to the angels above. Kadesh Yuni Karim, in order that it should be, that they can be seen. Which on a basic level, I could just say, it's like if you're with a tour group and, you know, the guy's got a flag over there, so then you know where you're supposed to go to. And it's almost like he's saying that, but do you realize like in a half a sentence he said two things which sound absolutely contradictory? One is that this is totally pragmatic and practical, so you know where you're supposed to go. And the other is, and this is really the behavior of the angels in heaven, so, you know, one is totally earthbound and the other is totally a part of heaven. Uminayin shehu ahavali Yisrael, sheken Shlomo Omer, havi'ini el beit hayayin, udiglu alai ahava. So, just to make trouble for us, it goes and it brings a verse from Shir HaShirim. So, of course, you know that if it's going to be a verse from Shir HaShirim, we're in trouble. There's an expression of love here. God does this out of love. Havi'inu el beit hayayin. Bring me, well, so first of all, there is a theme, which is a number of times in Shir HaShirim. It's not the main theme, it's like a little bit below the surface in terms of rooms or doors or houses, knocking on the door, coming into the door, entering the house, entering into the room. I want to go into the room of the king. We want to be alone, right? There is this, the structure is actually there, but we ignore it because we get so caught up in everything else. Havi anu el beit hayayin. Bring me to, well, a lot of you would probably like to go to the beit hayayin, right? Yes, I know you. So the beit hayayin is good. So I need to remind you, and I know that a lot of you don't like gematriot, and that's not my fault, it's your fault. There are some gematriot which Chazal say, meaning there are some which some, I don't know, somebody more recently noticed, oh, look, this word is the same. And there's some that Chazal say, no, you need to pay attention to this. So, for example, the Chazal say, Mishenichnas Yayin, Yotze Sod. That when Yayin goes in, secrets come out. Which means Yayin is associated with secrets. Because Yayin and Sod are both 70. So over here, when it says the Beit HaYayin, the Beit HaYayin is the house of secrets. Okay, that's what this is. This is the house of secrets. So therefore, the love over here that we're talking about is actually going to be connected to Matan Torah, because what happens at Matan Torah, so as much as you're going to say that we were by a mountain, the theme, the way it's being said over here, Yishnashkenu Minishkat Pihu, right? Kiss me kisses of the mouth. That's Matan Torah, where God speaks with his mouth and talks to, meaning that is the commentary on Shir HaShirim. It is when secrets are being revealed. It's the kiss of God is telling us secrets over here. Come into the house of secrets is Matan Torah. God is inviting us into the home in order to tell us or reveal to us all kinds of secrets. V'diglu alai ahava. So of course the word diglu, it notices over here some kind of connection with degel. So there's something of a diglu alai ahava. So that's what it's saying, is that somehow the degel is an expression of love. Rabbi Yehuda Omer v'inyo beit hayayin, l'martef hagadol shel yayin ze Sinai. Do you now see what I was saying is correct in terms of the Yayin being the secrets and the 49 levels of understanding, that the Beit HaYayin is Sinai, that's where the secrets are revealed, this is where all knowledge emanates from. V'diglu alai ahava, Rabbi Yisach Omer v'diglu alai ahava, filo adam yoshev osik betor medaleg malacha alacha u'mipasuk l'pasuk. By the way, just notice that it just inverted the letters from diglu to daleg. Inverted the letters and saying, if somebody's learning is so important because now you're connecting to the secrets of God. It's essentially God is involved in a, there is a romantic, for Kabbalists, perhaps even erotic connection between man and God, and therefore any studying of Torah is an act of love, as it were. And therefore, even if you skip from one to that's what it's saying. You skip from one halakha to the other, and you go from one to the other, which I don't think is being said in as negative a way as you can understand it. Listen, I don't understand this page. Skip to the next page. I don't understand that one. The next one. But it's saying, you just go, I'm going to read it again, that even if somebody's sitting involved in Torah, umidaleik me halakha halakha, umi pasuk la pasuk, Aman Kodesh Baruch Hu Chaviva Olai, God says, you know, this is an act of love. Somebody involved in the study of Torah, God is understanding that it's an act of love. Because again, Sinai, when God shares to us Torah, this is actually a really good introduction for Chag HaShavuot, I hope you realize. V'duglu alay ava, v'dilugu alay ava, davar achi v'dilugu alay ava, Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, yesh lumat d'galim v'ein chaviv alay, ela d'glo shel Yaakov. That the nations have flags, but the only one which I really like is the one of Yaakov. And of course, you're thinking to yourself, what in the world is it talking about? What is this thing of Yaakov? I will come back to that. Shenemar dagul mirvava, kevin shirot on Yisrael shehem osim degalim degalim itchilu mitavim la degalim. So somehow, and I don't want to go any further into this than I've already have gone now, that during Matan Torah, we had some kind of an appreciation, or as it were, an epiphany that there are angels in front of us, and we see all of these angels, and these angels have something which are called the galim. If you want to call them flags, I'm fine. And Am Yisrael and say, oh, we really want this as well, and God said, sure. And that's why God gives us these digalim, which of course we don't know what we're talking about yet. Good. Let's skip to number 3. Shasalu kimba midbar, degel machane Yuda, degel machane Ruvain, degel machane Dan, degel machane Ephraim. Yuchalim atem lasot lanu kach, ma techazu bishulamid, ma gdulat anotenet lanu shema kimochelet hamachanim, hamachanayim. We'll skip a little bit. So somehow it's saying is that when Bilam looks up, and we know what he's going to say, he's going to say, Ma tovu lecha Yaakov, he actually sees these things, the Degalim, he sees something which we still don't know what it is that he sees. We don't know what this is that God gave. We know that somehow it's connected to Yaakov, but we know that somehow connected to the angels. Do we have all the pieces yet? I'll say it again. It's somehow connected to Yaakov, we don't know why. It's somehow connected to the angels, but we don't know why. By the way, Yaakov and angels worked well together as well. Yaakov, he hangs out with angels. He sees angels. He wrestles with angels. I mean, Yaakov and angels is easy, but somehow there is this connection of Yaakov and angels. It's actually, there's a really interesting midrash. It says that when the angels came down, they saw Yaakov. They say, oh, he looks familiar, because they recognized him from the Kisei HaKavod. That's what the Midrash says. They recognize Yaakov because Yaakov's image was on the Kisei HaKavod, but I need also to explain that as well. So now we have lots of confusing pieces of information, which means that we are in perfect position. We see that the Bilam looks at this and then he's overwhelmed. He can't compete with it. But it's something to do with the camp, the encampment, the formation, the flags, Yaakov, angels. Okay, we got everything. Perfect. Source 4. B'shashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Moshe, say otam degalim k'moshe nit'avu. Okay, make for them, you know, these degalim like they want. Hitchil Moshe Meitzar. Moshe said, oh my God, what? You're getting me in trouble again now. Why? Amar, achshav atid ha-machloki l'itam b'yam ha-shvatim. They're going to start fighting. He goes, no, I want to be in the south, because everyone's going to start fighting over where they sit on the bus, which means I love this. What's your problem? Everyone knows their proper place. So what do you mean everyone knows their proper place? Ella Tiyatekiyesh bayadan mi Yaakov avihim, hech lishrot bidgalim. Eini machadesh alehim. For yesh lam tchassim mi Yaakov avihim kamosha ta'anu oto, vikifu mitato, kaf yakifu et hamishkan. So this goes back and it talks about the deathbed scene of Yaakov. Yaakov is there and he's surrounded by the 12 tribes. So have you ever wondered, so what exactly was the sequence in terms of sitting, of standing around Yaakov's bed? So this Midrash says that Yaakov told them exactly how to stand. But I do want you to note something. We have a sequence of the tribes over here, or sequence of the camp, that we don't know why it is. We can try to work backwards and figure it out. So what this Midrash said, oh, of course this is what it is, because this is what it was. How it knows what it was is a whole other question. I don't know how it knows what it was, other than saying this is tradition, but saying, Moshe's, I'm going to have to put them in order, they're going to all be upset. He said, no, they're not going to be upset. Everyone knows exactly where they stand, but how do they know where they stand? Because there is a historical precedent to this, and this is that Yaakov Avinu, he told them this is how you stand. I need to, again, pause here to understand, because notice again, we got back to Yaakov. And this was really what was being referred to before when it says when it spoke about Yaakov. So then what did we have? We have Yaakov in the center, men being surrounded by the 12 tribes. What's going to happen then is Yaakov dies, and they're going to take the Aaron, and they're going to march to Israel. So what we have over here is, quote-unquote, an encampment, and then we're going to have a marching formation. So it's saying is that the present marching formation, and now notice the huge difference. The huge difference is now, and this is the one thing we've been ignoring till this point, the Mishkan is in the center. The Aaron is in the center. Now notice the two Aarons. There was the Aaron with Yaakov's remains, and over here is the Aaron with the Aseret HaDibrot, with the Mishkan surrounding it, surrounded then by the tribes, and over here surrounded by the tribes. And what the Midrash is saying is that there's a parallel. Of course, to tighten up the parallel, we would, and I know all of you are thinking this right now, is that of course Yaakov is Ishtam Yosheva Ohalim, Yaakov is Torah. So if Yaakov is Torah, Yaakov represents Torah, the Luchot represent Torah. So over here is Yaakov in the center in his Aaron, which will then be taken, and here is the Aaron with the Torah. So therefore it's suggesting this, again, Midrashic parallel between marching to Israel first time with Yaakov, 12 tribes, and now, and again, notice, tribes, there's still 12 people, and now they're marching with the 12 tribes, and it's saying, oh, we've gone back to tribalism, we've gone back to the tribes, so where's the last time that we really saw this clearly? Oh, we had seen this clearly with Yaakov and around Yaakov's deathbed, when Yaakov actually discusses all of his sons who are all standing over there. So then it's creating this further connection between the two and saying, well, just like we had the tribes there, now we've morphed into, you know, a nation, but we still have the tribal affiliations, and just like they march there is how they're going to march over here. And as I'll say, all that whole parallel is really quite interesting, but that's what this Midrash just now did for us. Let's continue this a little bit more. In source, and again, you can read the rest of four, but that's it just explains the whole Yaakov connection more. But we need to get to number five. And again, this is talking about the flags themselves. It says, you put ba'otot. I'll read the pasuk. You do not have it in front of you, I don't think. It says as follows, V'deber Hashem Moshe, this is Perek Bet, V'el Aaron Lemor, Ish al diglo ba'otot lebet avotam yichanu Beit Yisrael, mineged saviv la'o'amoed yichanu. So again, don't miss this. They're soldiers. There's an army being put together. We have the leaders. But the center is the Mishkan. You know, all those times we had in the Torah where it says, God will be in your midst. So you have actually not just a visual of that, you have a real representation of that. You're surrounding this, and God is in their midst. The Shechina is in their midst. The Mishkan, the Shechina, is in the midst. The Kruvim are there in the center. The Luchot are there. The Torah is there. So therefore, God is in their midst. That's, again, on a most literal sense. But it said another thing. It says that when you do this, Ish al diglo ba'otot. So what's the otot? What's the ot is a sign. So what are the signs on the Ish al diglo ba'otot lebeit avotam? the signs which are connected to their to their families, which means there's somehow going to be a sign which is going to connect back to Reuven and to Shimon and so on. Again, ish al de globe otot lebeit avotam yichanu bnei Yisrael. So they're all going to camp according to the flags and the signs. So now let's read source number 5. Ba'otot, simanim ayu l'kol nasi v'nasi. Mapa v'tseva al kol mapa, u'mapa katsev shel avanim tavot shayu al libo shel Aaron. Again, a wonderful cross-pollinization between tribal affiliation and between the place of holiness, the Mishkan, and the Kohen, and what's on the Kohen's chest in terms of the stones. And it's saying that each one had a stone which represented them on the breastplate of Aaron, so those stones are going to now be the colors that are going to be used. At some point earlier in the week, I worked very hard to try to work the colors into this as well, and that got pushed on the side. There's a wonderful artist who I'm friendly with, Ofer Friedland, who, if you walk into the Waldorf, you'll see some of her artwork on it. So she gave me a work that she did on all 12 tribes with the stones and the colors that she worked out on each one. And I should have brought it in. If anybody wants, I could bring it in next week. No, she gave me copies of it. Yeah. I don't want to teach a class on it, so she gave me for all the students. Yeah, everyone got to take home a piece of art. Her covers are on two of my books, The River That Flowed from Eden, and those are her colors. Those are her covers, sorry. Kol shevet shevet nasi shelo, tseva mapa shelo dome le tseva shel avno. Ruvein avno odem, umapo shelo tsevu odem, umitziar alav dudaim. So the dudaim, the mandrakes, will be what's on his flag. Shimon pitda, umapa shelo tsevu yarok, umitziar alav shchem. Wow, that's interesting. Levi bereken wapashalo, so it's interesting. Levi also is included here. Tzavuah shlish lavan shlish shachor shlish adom mutzer alav urim v'tumim. Yehuda nofech v'tseva mapashalo d'muto kimin shamayim u'mitziyor alav aryeh. So I want to focus on Yehuda for a second because that is really, well, Reuven and Yehuda are the ones I want to focus on because those are two of the four main camps. So one of them is the Dudaim, and one of them is an Aryeh, a lion. Yisachar, Sapir, Mpashalot Tzavuah Shachar, Dom Lekchol Mitzior, Alav, Shemesh V'Yireach Al Shem, U'bnei Yisachar Yodei Bina Le'itim, Zvulun Yahalom, V'Tzev Mpashalot, those women who like diamonds, you know that your souls come from Zvulun, U'mitzior Alav, Sfina, Al Shem, Zvulun L'chof Yomim Yishkon, Dan, Leshem, v'tzeva mapashlo dome l'sapir, mutzir alav nachash. So Dan is important as well because that's another one of the main camps, nachash. Yidan nachash, Gad, shavo, v'tzeva mapashlo lavan, v'lo shachor, ela mu'urav shachor v'lavan, mutzir alav machane al shem, Gad gadud yigidenu. So he has a machane. Naftali, achlama v'tzeva mapashlo dome l'yayin, tzalul, Shein admuto azam mutzira alav ayala, naftali ayala shlucha, asher tashish v'tzeva mapashlo dome la'evin yikara, shemitkashetet bo nashim, mutzira alav ilan zayit. Al shem asher shmina lachmo, from the shemen. Yosef shoham v'tzeva mapashlo shachor admaod, mutzira l'shnei nisiyim Ephraim and Menashe. And we're skipping a little bit there, and Ephraim haya mutzira re'im. Al Shem v'Karnei Re'im Karnav, Binyamin, Doma l'kol ha-tzva'im, l'shnei matzar tzva'im, mutzar lav ze'ev. So, I hope you realize that there's a lot to do with this midrash, and we're not going to do it. There's just one thing I do want to do with this, and that's... In source number 6, we have another midrash, and it goes through the same information. And it's almost identical. There's actually more things that you need over there. But let's skip. Let's skip to number 8. Let's skip to the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra says, "Ba'otot simanim ayu b'chol degel v'degel v'kadmoneinu amru." Who these kadmoneinu are, he doesn't tell us. I mean, we have a Ramban, which I think I cut out. Another Ramban is in source number 12. He quotes something and he says, "Kinyan shuzgar b'sefer Yetzirah." And I can't find, nor can anyone else, where it says that in the Sefer Yetzirah. Ibn Ezra quotes a source, Kadmonenu. We don't know exactly who this is. Just to amuse you a little bit, in source number 9, the Sefer HaTzioni is going to make the same point and say, V'yafzimun yalem b'chol mapa v'davor mekubal ish mipi ish ad Moshe. So he says, you know, this is Torah Shebal Peh. What I'm about to tell you now. This goes all the way back, but let's look at the Ibn Ezra because he makes one shift that we need to understand. The early authorities. So the Ibn Ezra writes, the Kadmonenu Amru, Shela Degel Ruvain Surat Adam, the Dudaim are mandrakes, and they look like people. We've discussed this in the past. Mikoach Drash Dudaim, Uvdegel Yehudat Surat Aryeh, right? By Yehuda, it looks like a lion. Why? And that's for obvious reasons. Kivo Mshilu Yaakov. Uvdegel Ephraim Surat Shor, right? Mitam Bechor Shor. Uvedegel dan tsurat nesher. So how do they switch from the nachash to the nesher, or for that matter, why do they switch from the nachash to the nesher? Nesher is an eagle. Ad sheyidmu likruvim shera yecheskel hanavi. So, what just now happened? In the first chapter and in the 10th chapter of Yecheskel, well, the first chapter, we have the Maaseh Merkava. Those of you who will be awake on Shavuot morning, right, by the time you get to the Haftorah, right, everyone's asleep, there's a halach, you're not supposed to be doresh about the Merkava in public with not more than one person. So that's the minhag of staying up all night, so no one's awake when they do this, so it's not more than one person actually hears this. But if you look in the first chapter, you'll see that part of the vision that Yecheskel has when he sees the Merkava, and the word Merkava there is never used, is that it sees that there are four faces. Now, of course, one is the face of a man. And that's what the Ibn Ezra is telling us. This is the tradition, and this is what the Tzioni is going to say as well, is that man is connected to the Kruv. Because in the first chapter, it's called an Ish, and in the 10th chapter, it's called a Kruv. So the Kruv looking like a person. So therefore, one, and this is the other side he sees is a lion, another side he sees a shor, and the other side he sees a nesher. So therefore, you couldn't leave it just as a nachash, because that doesn't work. Actually, there are commentaries who will work hard to combine this together and say that it was really, I guess, what you would call a dragon or a flying dragon, some kind of a prehistoric thing that looked like a nachash in terms of most of its body, but there was one major difference, and that is that it had wings. Because the point of the nesher is that it has wings. And therefore, I don't know, somebody will decide what kind of prehistoric... One of those things. I know, I could have said that. Exactly. And it says, and therefore, depending on who's reporting it, we reported, oh, it's a nachash, because that is nachash. It says, no, but the visual, when Yecheskel actually sees it, he describes it as a nesher, because it's actually flying, which things tend to do when you are looking at things that are like angels. So hopefully that got a little bit more interesting, because what did we just now do? What did the Ibn Ezra accomplish just now, or what did he hopefully lead us towards? You're not sure. What he led us towards is that the encampments, these four camps, which means the four camps of Yehuda and of Reuven and of Yosef and of Dan, those four camps represent the Merkava. They represent the visual that Yecheskel had, by the way. They represent the visual that Am Yisrael have at Har Sinai. And therefore, again, they see the angels. But just like the angels are divided into these four, and that's the Merkava. That's, again, if you wish, a spiritual elevator, which Har Sinai is. Because at Har Sinai, we're sitting on the ground, or our feet on the ground, but we're connected into the heavens. Which, of course, you know that there's another place that happened. That's by the Sulam. And it's not a coincidence that Sulam is always spelt without the Vav, and Sulam Gematria is Sinai. That's not a coincidence, because that's the same thing, is that you can have your feet on the ground and be connected and have your heads in the clouds. But how do you do that? That's exactly what the Merkava is, which means, we've said this so many times, we don't know what the word Sulam means. Sulam, it's a word which is only used once in Tanakh. So we know it's something that leads up into heaven, but it is just as much a spiritual elevator, or for that matter, a Merkava that goes up as much as it is a ladder. Don't get fooled, just because you call it a staircase means that that's what it is. It's a way of negotiating with the distance between heaven and earth. Michael, remember the word for something which is only one time in all of Tanakh? I knew you would, else I wouldn't have asked. So we interpret it as being a ladder, but it's something with its feet on the ground, reaches into heaven, and that's exactly what we're talking about over here, back to heaven. But that's really interesting, because Am Yisrael, again, what do we keep saying? The Mishkan is in our center. The center is the heart. The Mishkan is in the center. But if the heart is holy, then everything else is supposed to be holy. The camp is supposed to be holy. What is it that Bilam sees and says, oh, I can't deal with this? Bilam sees the Merkava. Bilam sees something incredibly holy, which has its feet on the ground, its head up in the clouds, says, I can't deal with this. This is, meaning, the things I can curse, I can't curse heaven, I can't curse angels, I can't curse things, which are on a higher pay grade than me, which means this is absolutely impossible. But all of this just now emerged out of this realization of what that little shift that the Ibn Ezra says that he has a tradition, or that Tzioni tells us that this goes all the way back to Moshe at Sinai, that don't get fooled to think it's the Nachash. It's not a Nachash. It looks like a Nachash. But there's this other element to it where it's a Nachash with wings, which makes it some kind of other animal. So let's see what else we can do today before we send you on your way. For us, when you look at the end of the Tzioni, the last line there, Degel Dan Tzurat Nesher. The most important source for you, and this is going to be your homework, because we're not going to do all of this today, is going to be the Rabbeinu Bachaye, who is going to reveal all kinds of things over here, and we're only going to do some of them. Look on page 4, second paragraph, V'dava Havein, you should know and understand. So what I've been telling you, he says it black and white. V'degel machane Yehuda l'mizrach, chayashishma shor, u'machane Rifael, v'degel machane Ephraim l'marav, chayashma Adam, u'machane Michael, v'degel machane Ruvain l'darom, chayashishma Nesher, u'machane Uriel. I hope that those four names are familiar to you. I have it. I fixed it. You don't have a number by it, but it's between, it's right before the Ramban. You have the Nusach of the Tefillah, B'shem Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Mimini, Michael, Mismoli, Gavriel, Milofanai, Uriel, Mecharai, Rafael, V'yarushi, Shchinatkel. So therefore, this idea of a person's laying in bed and they see the angels around them, this is actually what he's suggesting, is the four camps. Next paragraph in the... Well, let's continue. In the second paragraph there, in the Rabbeinu Bachaye, V'avin hitev, that Am Yisrael below are connected to the angels above. If you understand this, all kinds of wisdom will be revealed. And they're connected to the angels above that I've explained, and that was in the previous paragraph that we skipped. Shekulim chotamim b'shem el, timtza shemot nisi'ei ha-shvatim omdim la'arba ruchot shechotamim b'shem el gamkein. So I have to pause a second to explain what he just now said. Go back to the first source. How many of the names of the first name, not this, the son of, had the name El within them? Because we know all the angels, Rifael, Gavriel, Michael. So how many of them in the first name had El as an end of the name? So if we look at, let's start with Shimon. Shimon is Shelumiel. Now, take Shimon and place him in his proper place. And what's that? Right next to Reuven. So we have somebody, let's put him on the right hand of Reuven. So on the right hand of Reuven, you have an angel, Shlumiel. We go over to the next one, to Yehuda. Where is the next El? Yisachar. On the right of Yehuda, Nitanel. Look for the next one, right? You have Menashe on the right of Ephraim, Gamliel. You go over to the next one, which is by, next to Dan is Asher, Pagiel. So there are four of them that have the name El in them, and those four are representing of angels, which means what he's saying is that Am Yisrael below represent the angels above, and there is this mirroring. It's not just that we're lining up like the Merkava, it's that Am Yisrael has unbelievable Kedusha to it, and therefore, as it were, the face of the four leaders, the lion, right, the shor, the Adam, right? And was the last one? Lion, Nesh, the Nesher, the eagle. Those four, each one of them, represent the Merkava. Right next to them is the Nasi with the name El to it, which is this aspect of being an angel. So when I said, oh, let's pay attention to the names over here, all the names were positive, but Rabbeinu Bechaya just now pointed out, you know, if we thought we had it before, we thought we understood everything in the first 5 minutes today, you start looking and saying, wow, we did not understand anything, because again, as far as he's concerned, we're dealing with incredible things. And look at the third paragraph there on the page four, Rabbeinu Bechaya. He goes, there's something unbelievable, and it'd be better for me to hide it. Maybe I should stop. And that's what I had already pointed out. So lest you think that I made this up myself, so I'm just letting you know that this is in fact the Rabbeinu Bechaya. He has more to say below. Ve'im titzaref ha'arba yamim shehikrivu bahem ha'arba nisiim shechotmim b'shem el. You'll notice it's Yom HaSheni, Shekriv Netanel, Yom HaChamishi, Shlomi El, Uv'Yom HaShmini, Gamliel, V'Yom Shneimasar, Pagiel. And if you add those numbers together, Yotzei L'Chamishguen, HaSheni, Chamishi, HaShmini, V'Shteyasar, Mimispar HaShem HaMiyuchad, they add up to 26, which is the Yudke Vavke, and HaShem. And he's saying is that over here is an incredible expression of holiness, and sometimes we miss it. And by the way, it's so easy for us to look at Am Yisrael and miss the holiness. And what he's saying over here is God is in our midst. And we say God is in our midst, that we think, okay, I did a mitzvah, so God is in our midst. And what we're beginning to realize over here, first of all, let's say it, the army is a holy enterprise. That's what this is. It's the tzava. The army is a holy enterprise. And this is an army that has to have God in its midst. And this is an encampment which surrounds God. It surrounds the Mishkan, it surrounds the Shechina, and just like Yaakov Avinu, in terms of his Aaron, is in the center over here, the Aaron is in the center. But it's much deeper than this. When you begin to understand the way that it's configured, you realize you're dealing with something which has unbelievable holiness. This is the Merkava, which was seen by Yechezkel. And the four main faces, the animals which represent them, are the faces of the Merkava. But it's more than that, because there is an aspect of somehow there's angels over here, and now we see to the right of each one of those, we see that El, we see the angel, which is right there, and those angels, you add up the days, it's the Yudke Vavke, and you realize that God is in our midst, and God is in our midst, and God is in our midst, no matter which way that you're looking at it over here, and you realize that there is this incredible potential of holiness in Am Yisrael. And this is the formation that they were put in. Yaakov Avinu sees it, and Yaakov, therefore, the Midrash says, that's where and why Yaakov puts us in this particular formation. In the desert now, this is what God orders, this is how we're going to be lined up, because there is holiness involved in this. We're about to start a march. It's going to take longer than we want. We're going to enter into the land of Israel. This is the way that we march. This is the way that we're going to be encamped. And when we live up to that level where God truly is with us, then no one can stand in our way. Nobody can possibly defeat us. They can't even look at us, because they're able to see this unbelievable holiness which is sitting there. So our bracha for Klal Yisrael is that somehow we live up to this incredible holiness that we have within. And when you read these psukim that all of you skipped over and all of you thought had no meaning whatsoever and all of you thought was completely arbitrary, so realize the deepest and the holiest things are in the portions that you just want to skip.